I'm psychologist Dr. Michael Broder, welcoming you to this program I call How to Develop the Ingredients for Staying Together in Your Marriage or Love Relationship. In this program, we're going to talk about all the things that successful relationships are made of and how you can incorporate them into your life together. Throughout the program, there will be numerous exercises you can do either with your partner or alone. The exercises are designed to help you to apply the material I'm presenting to your own unique situation. This will help you to reap the maximum benefit from the program. Most of the material you're going to hear will very much hit home, and you may wish to listen to certain specific sections several times. Some other things in this program may not apply to your relationship at all, but it's important that you listen to the entire program so that you can make this distinction. It would be helpful to keep a pen and paper handy, as there are times when you might want to take notes. Many couples find it most beneficial to listen to this program together and to stop the tape frequently so that they can discuss some of the issues that come up. Some couples find it even more beneficial to listen to the program alone and then compare notes. Either way is fine, so let your preferences here prevail. You might find it helpful to listen all the way through the first time without doing any of the exercises, and then becoming actively involved with the exercises during your second listening. But once again, others find it best to attempt the exercises the first time through. There's a lot of information to digest, so don't worry if you don't get it all in one or two listenings. However you or you and your partner choose to utilize this program, I hope that you'll consider it an important source of support that's always there for you whenever you need it. If you're driving a car, you can do the exercises mentally and then come back to those that require writing or visualization at a time when it's more convenient. But the extent to which you do the exercises is the extent to which the material will quickly become second nature to you. You'll see and feel the results as they apply to your issues almost immediately. And incidentally, I'll be using the word issue a lot throughout this program. My definition of an issue is simply anything that's important to either of you concerning your relationship or each other that warrants discussion in the opinion of either one of you. A love relationship, strictly speaking, is only as good as the needs it fulfills for each partner. Think about that. And successful relationships are supported by two main pillars. The first one is passion, and the second I call comfort. The reason that I put passion first is because passion is usually the element that first brings us together as a couple. It's the stuff that romance is made of. It's attraction, sexual feelings, the characteristic that makes love relationships different from all other kinds of friendships, involvements, and associations. But a relationship that's grounded only in passion, without that other element of comfort, will usually be marked by extreme highs and lows. Ultimately, it can be stormy or short or both. Very often, short-term relationships have this characteristic where once the initial passion fizzles, so does the whole relationship. So passion alone does not provide the stability that a long-term relationship needs. For this, we turn to the other element, comfort. Comfort is what keeps us together. It's the day-to-day glue that allows a couple to have an enjoyable or peaceful coexistence. With few exceptions, couples who have stayed together for decades and who describe themselves as still quite happy ultimately point to comfort as the ingredient which has sustained their relationship for so long. Comfort is measured by the degree to which you can be yourself in the relationship without withdrawing or becoming preoccupied with pleasing your partner to the detriment of your own needs. And it's also related to the degree to which you and your partner share that feeling of ease with one another. Accepting your partner for the person he or she is, being able to deal with your conflicts, however big or small, and having enough things in common, such as life goals, are the elements that create the kind of psychological environment where you can nurture and sustain your relationship. Where comfort is mutual, it generally becomes the foundation upon which you can build a strong framework to handle all of your other issues. This program will avoid romanticizing about relationships. Often when we romanticize, we infer that a relationship can operate on automatic pilot without working on the issues that will inevitably come up. Nothing could be further from the truth. No matter how good your relationship is, without putting some degree of effort into ensuring that it continues to be satisfactory to both of you, it will most likely begin to go downhill. As an analogy, consider this. Suppose you had a business that was doing well and making lots of money. So instead of continuing to work on it, you now decide you'd rather let it run on its own energy since it's so successful. What then would happen to your business? You know the answer. It wouldn't be long before it would go bankrupt or fail. Well, a relationship to one degree or another operates in the same exact way. It can return huge dividends to you, but only to the extent that you give it the attention it requires and deserves. So what makes relationships work? Naturally, every relationship is different, but those that work do have similarities. People who choose to stay together in long-term relationships usually point in one way or another to the pillars I've already mentioned, passion and comfort. But in talking to many thousands of individuals and couples, both in therapy and while I wrote the book, The Art of Staying Together, I discovered a number of much more specific traits and attitudes that form the basis for the best relationships. If your relationship really works well, a checklist that describes it would probably look like this. You recognize that an issue that affects either of you affects both of you as a couple, and you don't consider something resolved until you find a win-win solution that favors both of you. You value your relationship because it fulfills the needs of both you and your partner. If you've ever been in a relationship where the love has gone away, didn't that happen because fulfillment had stopped? And while we're on the subject, there's really no such thing as unconditional love between two partners. Love is, in fact, conditional and based not so much on who the other person is, but what he or she does. If this were not the case, like swans, we too would innately mate for life. Next, you think in terms of what's in each other's long-term best interest, and thus you exhibit the ability to grow both separately and together. And in addition to love, you like, trust, and respect one another. And these feelings transcend your disagreements. When couples tell me that they feel that love has gone away, I'm not nearly as concerned as when I hear them say that they don't like each other anymore. Since chances are, when the issues are resolved, the loving feelings will resurface in a couple who still like each other. You mutually support one another's pursuit of what's important to your partner, and each of you encourages the other to develop in their own unique way. When you and your partner do things and make sacrifices for each other, you don't feel like martyrs. Instead, each of you knows that your ability to have and behave with concern for the other person is to the advantage of both of you as well as to each of you separately. But at the same time, you don't rely on each other for all of your needs and validations. In other words, you acknowledge that it's perfectly okay to get many of your needs fulfilled by solitary activities or outside of the relationship by friends, family, and other members of your support system. You share power. Neither of you dominates the other. Instead, partners take turns being the balloon and string. Both of you have a degree of self-reliance. You're both comfortable with yourselves and you're able to accept yourselves to the same degree that you expect acceptance from your mate. You have similar values in most important areas of your life and have worked out a way to handle the inevitable disagreements in other areas. You're compatible sexually to a degree that satisfies both of you. You enjoy playing together non-sexually as well. You're interdependent. You know that you can rely on one another and believe that you're stronger acting as an item rather than separately. You also respect each other's privacy and need at times to be left alone and stand on your own two feet as opposed to always having to lean on each other. You both give each other a sufficient amount of attention and appreciation. Together and separately, you each take responsibility to give the relationship the time and attention that it needs and deserves. And perhaps most importantly, you see the need to problem solve together. You recognize that your issues will get much bigger than they need to be unless you work together to develop a way to resolve conflicts before they get out of hand. If you're listening to this program by yourself, take a moment to reflect on these characteristics of relationships that work well. Then make a list of those areas mentioned so far, first where your relationship is working well. Then make another list of areas where you believe your relationship could use some work. If you're listening with your partner, let me offer you two options for each time I tell you to stop the tape. One is to discuss the material between yourselves, and the other is for each of you separately to make the list I suggested and then afterwards exchange your lists, either on paper or verbally. Whichever way you do it, turn off the tape and make your two lists of areas mentioned where you believe your relationship is working well, then the second list of where your relationship can use some work. Then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. In general terms, how does the climate of your relationship need to change in order to better serve each of you? What needs to be different? While you're at it, you may want to acknowledge some of the things from your first list that are working well that you would like to see increase or get even better. Make your list include everything that comes to mind or add to the two lists you've already started. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. Next, I'd like you to consider what specifically you would have to change in order for each of those things you've identified to become a reality. First, think in terms of what changes you, not your partner, but you can make. We'll get to your partner in just a minute. Please put this on a new list. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. Next, what are some specific changes that you'd like to see your partner make? The key word here is specific. What behaviors of your partner would you like to request be changed? In other words, just what exactly is it that you would like from your partner at this stage in your relationship? Make this list as comprehensive as possible. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. Incidentally, you'll have plenty of time throughout the program to add to this list or subtract from it as you see fit. If you and your partner are listening together and doing this exercise together, exchange lists now and talk about the items that each of you has identified. Note any difficulties you're having communicating about this, because we'll be talking about communication next. Something I hear quite often from couples is this complaint: we don't communicate. Now, it's easy to see how this statement in and of itself is a misnomer, because to some degree, every couple communicates constantly. Even the silent treatment is a powerful form of communication. So couples who say they don't communicate are really talking about the quality of their communication. Some couples communicate superbly, others merely adequately, and still others plain abysmally. In stormy relationships, communication is usually characterized by intense anger, which represents an overabundance of negative passion. And it works like this. Whenever an argument begins, one or both partners pull out all the stops and make it a goal, literally, to overpower or even devastate the other partner. On the other hand, in relationships that are characterized by indifference, there's a chronic lack of passion. And often there's a hostile silent treatment or a long-standing habit of just refusing to talk about whatever it is that's bothering either partner or perhaps anything else that's going on. But underneath that indifference is usually a lot of seething rage. The distinction between a stormy relationship and an indifferent relationship is that when there's indifference, usually there isn't the meanness and possibly the abusive environment that stormy relationships generally have. However, in their own way, relationships that are characterized by indifference can be just as difficult. How you communicate is usually what sets the other standards for your relationship, since communication goes on constantly to the extent that you and your partner spend time together. So let's take a look at how well you actually understand each other's means of communication. Communication in marriage and love relationships has for years been the subject of much ongoing research. What the findings generally show is that the best indicator of whether a couple will stay together is the degree to which they can communicate effectively, especially in areas of conflict. Comfort is established when couples communicate well. And remember, comfort is the pillar most often associated with relationship longevity. Establishing comfort is that process where you get to know more and more about just who is that person you've chosen as your mate. That process where you learn to build together the lives you dreamed about when your relationship began and continued to grow. The good news is that effective communication can be learned, and once you do learn to communicate effectively, you can apply your communication skills to virtually every aspect of your relationship. Almost any crisis can be handled, even the ones that may seem to jeopardize your relationship, if you can learn to communicate well. And indeed, many couples get along in this area until a crisis or some other very difficult or sticky issue comes up and needs to be dealt with. And then the relationship gets tested. One way to communicate more effectively is to look at some of the attitudes you may be harboring toward your partner. Then you can make some conscious effort to change those attitudes that don't work. To illustrate what I mean, see how many of these you can identify with. If you have an attitude that says, "There's something I really want to share with my partner, but I feel uncomfortable doing so," try this alternative. "I've chosen my partner. We're intimate in many other ways. My relationship is important enough for me to risk being more open." In other words, think of this type of risk-taking as an exercise where you really can't lose. If things work out for you, it's easy to see how you've gotten what you want. But if the risk turns out to yield the results you most fear, then you've learned a great deal about your partner, your relationship, where it stands, and what gravely needs attention from both of you if you're to stay together. Or perhaps you have this attitude. "It's easier to let things go than to deal with the disagreements that will follow if I share my feelings." If this sounds familiar, then consider this alternative attitude. "It would be nice if something I'd like to avoid would really go away that easily, but I know in my heart of hearts it'll only come up again, so I'm better off facing it now." Here's a third attitude, which could be creating quite a problem for you. "I'm always the one who wants to talk when there is an issue." Therefore, I must be more committed to the relationship than my partner is. If you're telling yourself that, consider this alternative. Like any other difference that exists between us, it's a rare relationship in which each partner has the identical need to talk about certain issues. So if I want us to stay together, I'd better accept this as simply another one of our individual differences. If anger itself is an issue, each of you could ask yourselves, as opposed to each other, in the privacy of your own minds, how or what it is that you're angrily demanding be different. What is it you're telling yourself you can't tolerate? What are the expectations you're putting on your partner or the relationship that aren't being met? And are these expectations realistic? Incidentally, our program, Overcoming Your Anger, addresses this difficult emotion in the depth it deserves as it applies to all types of situations that trigger anger. But the program you're listening to will help you to work on your anger together about specific relationship issues. If you're telling yourself, "I've given up telling my partner about things that are bothering me. Whenever I do, my partner jumps in to tell me I should have done it differently, so I end up feeling negated, overwhelmed, and sorry I ever brought up the subject in the first place," consider and try this alternative. This frustration of mine is something that had better be talked about independently of our other issues and at a time when we're not necessarily arguing or focusing on something specific. I'll take the initiative to communicate this frustration, not in an angry way, but in a manner where we can address it to the satisfaction of both of us. People who jump in and act as rescuers, and who may even have a tendency to finish your sentences for you, generally don't realize how it affects you. If you can describe your feelings in a calm yet assertive and direct way, it'll help your partner understand your point of view as well as how their behavior affects you. And let me underscore that sometimes habits like this need a great deal of repetition to be broken. Don't expect your partner to change a long-standing habit merely by having it addressed one time. Finally, does this attitude sound familiar? Whenever I ask my partner how he or she feels about a matter or an issue we're discussing, my partner often answers something like, "I don't know." And this infuriates or frustrates me. If so, try this alternative. I need to look at my own communication style as well as that of my partner. I acknowledge that things will probably get a lot better when I stop making my partner wrong. Some people don't respond easily to the question, "What are you feeling?" If that's the case, try asking, "What are you thinking?" or "What do you think about such and such?" and fill in the blanks. Your partner may find it more natural to relate cognitively, that is, to thoughts rather than to feelings. Many couples differ in the way they perceive situations. One partner may relate intellectually, while the other partner puts a greater emphasis on feelings. This difference is a problem only when one partner tries to make the other partner wrong. Take a moment now to think about and identify some of the attitudes that are making your communication less than it could be. We'll get a little more specific in a moment, but in the meantime, see if you can recognize how your very own, not your partner's, but your attitudes about communication might be a culprit. Once again, take some notes, and if you're listening together, do this separately and then exchange or share what you've written down when you've finished. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. Next, if you've been able to identify some of your old attitudes that get you into trouble, see if you can now propose some alternatives to replace those troublemaking ones. Use the ones I mentioned which apply to you as well as others or variations of them that are appropriate. These alternative attitudes will go a long way toward improving the communication climate between you and your partner once you recognize and then adopt them. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. In addition to your attitudes about communication, your style is quite important too. So what I've put together are some actual styles of communication, conversing, discussing, and even fighting, which tend to be traps. Any styles that you can identify with have probably developed over a long period of time, and if so, they may be difficult to break, but not impossible. To the extent that any of these patterns of communication characterize the way you and your partner normally communicate, especially about the difficult subjects, chances are you're spinning your wheels. So here are 12 typical ways communication ultimately gets stifled. See which of these traps may apply to you. The first is drowning in anger, where one of you tries to discuss an issue while the other one's ventilating anger. This doesn't work. I have yet to see an important matter resolved in any meaningful and permanent way during the heat of an argument. Have you? Defensiveness is the second. This is where one of you becomes angry or defensive when confronted by an issue. Then instead of dealing with the issue at hand, you have an intense emotional reaction to it. Your emotions take control, overpowering the issue itself. Then when you finally do calm down, perhaps it becomes excruciatingly desirable just to forget what you were arguing about originally and to soothe each other's emotions instead. But forgetting really doesn't happen. The problem continues to fester, just waiting to erupt again at the next triggering event or conversation, and nothing's resolved. In another variation of the same theme of defensiveness, many couples become passionate and sensual after an argument, even though the real source of tension still hangs over them. Thus, anger becomes an antecedent to some of their most passionate sex. If you do this, you probably notice that when sex is over, the original issue remains intact and continues to nag at your relationship. I've met couples where anger is almost a form of foreplay to some of their best sex. In this case, it's not hard to see why they argue so much. The next one I call blatant avoidance. And to illustrate this, let me ask you, how often does one of you go to another room, leave the house, or simply turn a deaf ear to the other? This type of aborted communication triggers an obvious negative effect, and then the situation is likely to snowball until either of you will talk about what's wrong. Or when you try, it gets blown way out of proportion. This one I call right issue, wrong time. And it happens when an issue is brought up at an inappropriate time, such as when one of you is on the way to work or otherwise unavailable to give the matter whatever attention it deserves. If there's company present, or the children are around, or one of you isn't available for some other reason, you can be certain that you and your partner will not have much opportunity to deal with the situation straightforwardly. I'll call this next one rigidity, and this one occurs when either one or both of you has the need to be right 100% of the time. When this is the situation, you're not achieving much clarity because someone is always trying to win. In this next one, perhaps you're being way too personal. That is, attacking your partner's character or personality rather than focusing on the specifics of the issue, which, of course, is akin to hitting below the belt. Next, let me ask you this. Do you have trouble letting go? While fighting about one thing, you bring up old issues, Some that are even supposedly resolved that you use to justify your position now? This type of archaeology is very destructive when you're trying to keep matters between you currently. The next trap I call the all-or-nothing syndrome. And that's where you put your entire relationship on the line over every single disagreement and then wonder why either you or your partner avoids practically anything that smacks of a confrontation. How about this trap, where you allow a lethal buildup of negative emotions to occur? This can happen most easily if either one of you is too much of a pleaser. That is, if you're quick to agree on practically everything, you may let your real feelings build until some slight issue lights your fuse and then something quite minor turns it into a major crisis. In other words, you may be allowing your fear of confrontation to dominate your communication style. If you pretend things are fine when they're really not, then your anger is likely to intensify gradually, yet definitely, or come out indirectly or through small issues. If you're a pleaser, you may be deeply into the relationship before you show your partner the first signs of that anger. But all along, you and your partner are in actuality dealing with the buildup of emotions rather than the actual issues that are prompting those emotions. I call this next one the top dog syndrome. During an argument, one of you attempts to be the top dog, wearing the other down to the point of being the underdog. When this happens, your arguments have become exercises in control, with one or both of you trying to wear the other one down. Here, the actual but unspoken goal could be for one of you to gain control over the other. Then there's this one. You say you're not communicating, but you really mean you don't want to hear what your partner is telling you. And the final trap I'll talk about is where one of you devalues the other by attributing your conflict or one partner's opinion or trait to something like gender. For example, you say, women are so unsensitive in this area, or you men are all alike. Or perhaps you attack by pointing to your partner's religion, ethnic background, family, age, the perceived norms of your partner's family of origin, etc., 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 rather than staying with the issue or acknowledging your partner's ability to be free of any stereotype. As you may have noticed, the possible combinations of these traps are infinite. Imagine resolving a simple issue when a pleaser meets a top dog, or when two all-or-nothing partners get going at each other. In fact, most couples develop a blend of various styles of avoidance, which then becomes uniquely their own. It's a rare couple that doesn't resort to some of these negative communication styles at times. But any of these styles can serve to undo the good things you have together if they are patterns of how you typically communicate. This is especially true when the going gets tough. See if you can identify how you and your partner typically avoid communicating. What do you do to sabotage yourselves in this crucial area? Take a few minutes to identify your unique traps and put them on paper. Once again, if you're listening with your partner, first, work on this individually and then exchange lists. Turn the tape off and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. Once you've identified the ways you avoid communicating, I recommend that you both talk about how you can change these patterns of avoidance right now. Think of them as obstacles to your happiness. If you both understand the need to be committed to working together toward more effective communication, you've already taken a giant step. Talking about how you communicate or communicating about your communication styles can initiate a whole new era of how you are together in all aspects of your relationship. talk about having some signal that says time out when a discussion or argument gets out of hand. Share how such things as your partner's tone of voice or verbal gestures may put you off, even if they're not intentional. If this is not a convenient time to have this discussion, I suggest you make it a priority to have it as soon as possible. Now, let's talk about some communication styles that do work. Effective communication simply means reaching your partner with the message you really want heard, and just as importantly, reciprocating by listening when your partner wants to be heard. Effective communication does a number of things. Not only does it get your message across, but it also makes the other person want to hear your point of view. That's the first step in changing whatever it is that may have become a source of tension in your relationship. So to get back on track, try using some of these ideas as guides to constructive communication. When giving feedback, be as specific as possible. Good feedback is focused on behavior and things that can be changed in the other person, and is given in a constructive manner as opposed to a way which may cause your partner to react defensively. Good feedback is based on observations, not judgments or insults. An example of bad feedback would be to tell your partner that he or she is a nasty person or an insensitive person because your partner made an insensitive comment. Such a heavy judgment will almost always lead to a defensive response. But a more effective alternative would be to say, "I did not like your remark," or "I don't understand what you're angry or hurt about." Now, wouldn't the latter statement be more likely to give your partner room to make his or her feelings better known rather than forcing your partner to be defensive? Also, communicate assertively. Assertive communication happens when your feelings are expressed in words, but without threatening, putting down, or overpowering your partner. And when assertively communicating, it's particularly important not only to share your feelings, but to take responsibility for them as well. So when communicating assertively, make I statements. For example, instead of making an invalidating remark like, "You never listen to me," try saying, "I wish you could be more responsive when I talk to you about the things that are important to me." Instead of saying, "You're insensitive," say, "I feel hurt by," and then talk specifically about what was said that you perceived as being insensitive. This is a great alternative to merely expressing a negative feeling and will also go a long way toward getting the job of communicating something important done. It also allows you to take responsibility for your own feelings instead of engaging in the tempting yet ineffective practice of blaming your feelings and reactions on your partner. And at the same time, you can still communicate what's bothering you in a much more effective way. While feelings are not absolute facts, they do factually describe what's going on inside of someone. Thus, if your partner tells you, "I feel angry or hurt at you because you were very unresponsive to me," what's most important is not so much whether or not you were unresponsive, but the fact that your partner feels or perceives you that way. By the same token, you can't really change another person's feelings. If you say you're wrong to feel that way or some variation of that theme, you're probably headed on a course of frustration. Can you instead just acknowledge that you understand your partner's feelings without trying to change them? Remember, when it comes to our feelings, we all have our own realities. By acknowledging and reacting sensitively to the way your partner feels, You have the incredible power to make a dramatic change in the emotional climate that exists between you. By the way, acknowledging your partner's feelings is not to be confused with giving in to them. Think of it instead as merely being a way to hold up your share of the responsibility for communication. Being assertive also involves asking for what you want without the attitude that you shouldn't have to ask. Never expect your partner to be a mind reader. With some work, understanding, and practice, your efforts will most likely be reciprocated. So consider these communication skills as something it's 100% to your advantage to learn and practice. What about the ways you listen to each other? I believe you're really listening when you're hearing not only the literal words, but the spirit in which something was said as well. Rarely have I met anyone who's complained about their own ability to listen, but many are quick to complain about their partner's listening habits. Sometimes it's easier to illustrate what listening is not. You're not listening when you're giving unsolicited advice or just waiting for a pause so that you can speak. And you're certainly not listening when you're telling your partner that he or she is wrong or shouldn't feel a certain way. Also, you're not necessarily listening when you're just trying to soothe feelings or smooth over troubled waters. Indeed, that can be just another form of negating your partner's feelings. Whether your partner is being rational or irrational, telling you something you want to hear or don't want to hear, listening is simply taking it in. To be a truly good listener, try to ask questions or make comments which help clarify what the speaker is saying. You'll get your chance to react to the actual content of the message later on, but the first task of listening is to make certain that you know what it is that you're responding to. The following exercise is one that many couples find quite helpful in teaching them how to listen to each other. Set aside 15 to 20 minutes with your partner. During the first 5 minutes, ask your partner to talk about something you would like to know or understand. During this period, limit your own responses, if any, to clarifying what your partner is saying. If you make comments, do so only at times when a response is clearly requested. After 5 minutes of listening, take a few minutes to share with your partner what you heard, then switch roles. Then you become the speaker and your partner becomes the listener. Now you'll be in control of the conversation for the next 5 minute segment. During the time that remains after you're done speaking, it's your partner's turn to say what he or she has heard. You may be surprised during the give and take of this process how differently you heard each other. I encourage you then to talk about the experience and especially some of the distinctions you recognize in each of your individual listening styles. This will help you to understand why you may sometimes feel as though you're not getting through to each other. When doing this listening exercise, avoid discussing emotionally charged topics which will take you out of the listening mode. In fact, make it a point to avoid getting angry. This is just an exercise. Once you've mastered these skills, you'll be able to talk about practically anything without getting upset. Most couples report that sitting back and listening is at first very difficult. However, soon their overall communication becomes a lot easier and a lot more pleasant. Of course, you can repeat this exercise often, but especially when you feel yourself slipping. Feel free to vary the time you allot for the segments, provided both of you have a chance to practice your listening and stay on track. That is, let your partner talk, listen, give, and receive feedback during the time you set aside. Now go back over the list of issues you identified earlier where your relationship can use some work. You know what they are. Next, identify any other issues that may not be on the list. In general terms, they could be finances, in-laws, issues involving your children or step-parenting. Perhaps you're in a two-career relationship, and that creates some problems for you, or something has come up regarding your sex life, jealousy, how your time is spent, religious practices, or the roles of other important people in your life. Pick an issue and take the opportunity to apply some of the principles just discussed to the way you communicate about it. Getting this to work in your relationship takes only practice. And once you can learn these new habits and the attitudes behind them, they'll become automatic. So practice the skills on something that's been a problem in your relationship. Remember to be specific about what you want from each other, what you'd like to see changed, accepted, or understood. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. Remember, when working anything out, the goal is to have a win-win solution. That means it's important for both of you to get your point of view understood and to walk away with something you want. What kind of support do you prefer when you're feeling needy or in crisis? For each person, support has a different meaning. And knowing what your mate expects is crucial to knowing who that person you've chosen is. Unfortunately, we often give the type of support that helps us, the supporter, the most, rather than making the effort to learn what kind of support our partner, the supportee, responds to the best. Having given the kind of support that you yourself prefer with the best intentions, you may find that it either doesn't work or, worse yet, runs counter to what your partner really wants. So if the two of you are caught in this bind, your partner may end up feeling negated while you're feeling confused, unappreciated, and perhaps angry. This is a situation where obviously nobody wins. Some people prefer to be left alone during times of stress. If this is your preference, you may believe that leaving your partner alone is the best way to be supportive of them. But what if your partner prefers instead to have someone close to talk things over with at those times? What if your partner wants you just to listen without giving advice or being a problem solver? Or does your partner prefer to be given physical comfort without you being verbally responsive at all? Everyone defines support in his or her own way when feeling overwhelmed, needy, troubled, or in crisis. So the question is, what do you prefer, and what does your partner prefer? Here are some common definitions of emotional support that you can give each other. Neither is better nor worse than the other. For each, it's a matter of taste. Some simply like being left alone. I put this one first because in my marriage, this is how I often prefer to be supported, especially when I'm feeling overwhelmed. It's important that I have at least a half an hour or so to sort things out privately and then have the option of talking things over with my wife after I've gotten all I need out of my own solitude. Some people prefer to be held or comforted and like not to talk, but just be soothed on a feeling level, or just be listened to without response. Others prefer having their partners take over the situation, or at least become actively involved. Looking to your counterpart to talk things over with, to fact find, or possibly acting as a devil's advocate, works well for many people. Some people prefer different things at different times. Most importantly, when one of you is upset, talk about how you feel when you're ready, or ask for what you want. Don't assume that your partner should know automatically. Sometimes we have mixed emotions when we're feeling troubled. But as in all areas of your relationship, communicating these things will make a crucial difference. Remember, it's perfectly fine to be confused. You might say, I'm so upset now, I don't know how I feel. Or I might want you to help me later, but I don't know what I need yet. That's especially important if you just need some time to sort things out. Don't misinterpret a request to be left alone as an attempt to shut you out. This may merely be your partner's way of coping with the situation. If you're willing to step back when your partner wants some space, this is merely being respectful of your partner's needs. On the other hand, if you feel threatened by being shut out, you may be misinterpreting a short-term request for solitude as a way to shut you out. In all likelihood, it's not that at all, and you'll be as close as ever if you can only give your partner some time and space. Don't be judgmental of your partner's preferences either. What we prefer with respect to our own needs is not wisely judged as better or worse by others. We become the people we are through trial and error. Most of our styles and preferences develop because we find out what really works for us, and then we make choices for our own reasons and in our own ways. Take a moment now to think about how you like to be supported at those times when support is really what you'd like. Take some notes about this. And if you're listening together, once you've finished individually, exchange lists and have a discussion about how you can be more supportive of each other during those times when you would like most to be able to rely on your partner. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. With very few exceptions, two people in a relationship can learn how to communicate well if only they want to. This makes having comfort in your relationship something that's truly within your own reach. By keeping in mind some of these points regarding communication, you and your partner together will be able to weather almost any issue, problem, or crisis. Never negotiate when upset. If there's an ongoing issue that's likely to come up, work together to negotiate a win-win solution when you're feeling good about yourselves and initiate this negotiation by asking your partner to discuss it with the understanding that this will infinitely help your relationship in the long run. Make sure each of you has considered the other's perspectives. If your partner is venting anger, sometimes it's better if you just back off. A full-blown argument where nobody wins can't happen unless both of you collaborate. If your partner is raising his or her voice, you lower yours. Rarely do two people become equally as angry at the same time. With couples who have mastered this principle, the burden usually falls on the one who is least angry to diffuse the argument. Don't believe that by being the pacifist, you're wimping out. Instead, keep your eye on the long-term interest of your relationship. When one of you is so angry or upset that you can see that you'll soon say or do something you'll regret, call a timeout and remove yourself temporarily from the situation. Anger and hurt usually comes about in stages and can become infectious, that is, take on a life of its own. The earlier you can stop it in its tracks, the better off you'll be in the long run. Then schedule a time to resolve the conflict when you can concentrate on the conflict itself and you're not merely overwhelmed by emotions. Insisting that you be right or that you have the last word is rarely compatible with what's in your long-term best interest as a couple. This won't get you a win-win. I've spoken to many people in my office on the radio and in my seminars over the last 20 years who had a potentially great relationship fizzle out because they concentrated too much on winning battles at the expense of losing the war. Remember, how you say something is often way more important in the long run than what is being said. The message could be right, but your tone could totally negate the message. If you see this happen, realize that you're not getting anywhere, and for the sake of both of you, back off. Learn to empathize, and know that empathizing doesn't necessarily mean agreeing, but simply understanding how your partner feels. Healthy relationships have plenty of space for disagreement, but much less room for lack of empathy. Also, be careful about what you share with your family and friends concerning your relationship. Although discussing your relationship and its issues with outsiders may feel very good when you're upset, you'll often regret it later when things get patched up with your partner and others you talk to still remember that negative spin. Learn to take risks and never underestimate the power of risk-taking. Is there some issue that may be bothering your partner or something that's been bothering you which you're reluctant to bring up? A part of risk-taking is making your needs known, in fact, being vulnerable. Each time you open that channel of communication, it starts the momentum in a positive direction. Ultimately, those risks will make your relationship deeper, closer, and more enjoyable for both of you. Practice what can be considered meta-communication or communicating about your communication. There are numerous exercises in this program which illustrate this principle. From time to time, check with each other to find out if there's anything that seems to be creating a negative residue. Set time aside to talk. Turn off the TV and remove any other distractions, even if it's just for 10 or 15 minutes. I've yet to meet a couple who couldn't do this if they really tried. Some of the biggest and most destructive issues in a relationship can build up slowly because they're not talked about while the issues are small. However, doing this too often can sometimes also be destructive. So be sensitive to what works in your situation. When your attempts to improve communication aren't working, it's often because of your unspoken messages. No one has 100% of their needs fulfilled all of the time. Don't put negative labels on your relationship because it's sometimes unfulfilling. Accept that it will simply be unfulfilling at times. The fact that there are highs and lows in your relationship is just an indication that you're both human. And work to achieve balance together. Avoid making one partner the top dog and the other the underdog. When you have disagreements in areas such as whether to spend money, have sex, go on vacations, or to have a child, usually the one who says no wins the argument. But when the same person is almost always the one to say no, the relationship may be headed for trouble. It's fine to say no sometimes, but relationships that work best require a fair proportion of compromise. Put humor into your interactions. Learn to laugh at your issues. It's easier and more fun if you can loosen up together. Not only that, but humor is creative because it can turn logic upside down and diffuse tension. By making fun of yourselves and your quirks in a lighthearted way, you can diffuse many difficult or seemingly impossible situations and improve the possibility that you'll be able to talk them through. Once you've resolved an issue, let go of it. Some couples find it helpful to establish a 24 or 48-hour rule. That is, if it's not brought up again within that period of time after it's been resolved, it's dead forever. Don't dig up old resolved matters to justify your current arguments. Look at it this way. If you're together 20, 30, 40, 50, or 60 years, think of how much you would have on each other. Yes, if you wanted to let fly with a list of past misdeeds, you probably could, but there's no win for either of you in doing that. Couples who stay together are couples who can let go of their upsets and allow healing to occur. Here are some additional exercises that can help you to make better communication a staple in your relationship. Talk to each other about where you would like your relationship to be at specific periods of time. Think of this as goal setting for yourselves as a couple. That is, where would you like to see yourselves a month from now, 6 months from now, in a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, ultimately? As you talk about this, pay special attention to those things that might be standing in the way of the goals you've identified for yourselves. Note those obstacles as issues for which you now have the tools to work with. In other words, you don't have to wait for a problem to rear its ugly head before you start to think in terms of solutions. Communication can be just as powerful when it's used as a problem preventer as it is when it's used as a problem solver. If you're having difficulty empathizing, that is, seeing each other's perspective or point of view, try trading places. Take the issue at hand. You assume the role of your partner and let your partner take on your role. Now discuss that same issue. And when you do this exercise, remember, this is how you see each other in the situation you're having difficulty with. Use this as a source of information so you can understand just what your partner's frame of reference or point of view is when he or she reacts to you in a way that you find to be difficult. Some couples find trading places or reversing roles to be a very powerful tool which can be used almost any time they find themselves at an impasse. If you're unable to resolve a problem, try brainstorming solutions together. Come up with as many ideas as possible, allowing that some of them may even be absurd, but try this as a way to tap into your creativity. Brainstorming as a problem-solving device is certainly a well-established technique used in business and other organizations to create potential options. It can do wonders for your relationship as well. One way to brainstorm is to select a potential solution and then to freely analyze it and talk it through and see if it will work in your situation. If that one doesn't work, go for another one and discuss it, and so on. This can even be fun. The important thing is to see yourselves on the same team, not as opponents. Couples who continue to see themselves as part of the same team, even when things get rough, can use the synergy they create to ultimately resolve almost any issue. Most importantly, they practically always stay together. Another way of keeping current with the state of your relationship is to visualize what you would imagine the ideal relationship to be. Be as specific as possible in your vision of what you want. This can be your own vision or a shared vision with your partner. Then compare what your own relationship actually is to what you have visualized. See if you can identify the specific things that separate where you are now from what you have envisioned as ideal. But do this without demanding the kind of perfection that will cause you to feel that chronic sense of unfulfillment. What is ideal for you is not necessarily ideal for anyone else. The best relationships are custom jobs that are put together by the choices each of you make, both separately and together. What each of you wants is equally valid for the purpose of this vision. And remember, the best relationships are those grounded in the comfort of day-to-day living and not so much in passion or intense feelings. Passion may play a big part, but it's certainly not enough. By keeping current with your feelings and spending the time together to get to know each other on even deeper levels and to share your wants and desires, you'll continue to move toward what you define as your ideal relationship. Here are some more perspectives on staying together. Be open and honest with one another, but not so brutally open and honest that it becomes more of a source of hurt than a source of intimacy. Let your partner pursue what's important to him or her and make an agreement that you'll both do that for each other. This includes allowing each other some space and privacy. Also, be sensitive to your partner's needs for time alone. If there's one ingredient present in the happiest couples I know, it's this form of mutual support. And finally, building trust is crucial. But remember, building trust and increasing intimacy is a lifelong process. So to remember the ingredients for a great love relationship, consider the acronym TOUCH. T stands for tenderness. This can be both physical and emotional tenderness. T also stands for talk, something that couples who truly enjoy each other do quite often. O is openness. Few things can be as erotic as getting to know each other. O also stands for objectivity, which can come in quite handy when dealing with some of your most difficult issues. U is understanding, especially understanding how each other feels at key times. This is what we call empathy. U also stands for unique, which each of us is. C stands for chemistry. Who knows how this develops, but if it's there, never take it for granted. The degree to which you enjoy each other sexually and sensually is in part determined by how much chemistry is present. C also stands for comfort with each other, which is the crucial ingredient for couples who stay together. And H stands for honesty, which is the most important prerequisite for true intimacy. H also stands for the happy feelings that you can experience together when that intimacy is present. So remember that acronym, T-O-U-C-H, and it will touch every aspect of your relationship. I hope that you have found and continue to find this program helpful to you in making your relationship work better and better. I'd also like to suggest that you try our program, How to Enhance Passion and Satisfaction in Your Relationship. That program will talk to you about some of the most common issues regarding sexuality and sensuality, and describes how you can practically always raise the level of passion in your relationship. Do the exercises in this program often, and it will continue to be an ongoing source of support and enhancement that you can count on both individually and as a couple. And please let us know how you're doing. We're very concerned about your progress and welcome any comments about this audio program you may have. If we can be of any assistance to you with respect to resources that can help you further, feel free to call or write us. I'm Dr. Michael Broder, wishing you a lifetime of fulfillment.